Our next guest is Dr. Norman G. Kirlin. He is president of the Center for Economic and Social Justice, CESJ. It's an all-volunteer think tank in Arlington, Virginia, and is probably the world's leading expert into what they call the Just Third Way. And the Just Third Way is a alternative to the present financial and economic system based on what they say are flawed Keynesian assumptions, and is built on what they refer to as the four pillars of an economically just society. So I would like to welcome Dr. Kirlin to the broadcast. Dr. Kirlin, thanks for joining us today.
It's wonderful being with you today.
Well, I'm thrilled because I'm always looking for new economic theories, new ways of doing things, and I don't like what's going on currently in our country, economically speaking. And I was intrigued by your four pillars of an economically just society.
Right.
Can you tell me and our listeners a little bit about what the Just Third Way is?
Right. I think you're putting your finger on something. It's looking at what is wrong with not just the American economy, but the economies in general. And we've been following either a strict laissez-faire system or the other would be the socialist and communist variety. And the Keynesian economic theories are really trying to blend the two, and we have the mess that we're all experiencing.
Yeah, and poorly so.
Right. And there's going to be major problems. Now, I wish I could say that I invented these ideas. I studied economics at the University of Chicago, so I'm very familiar with the Chicago School of Economics and the Austrian School, which are basically free enterprise theories of economics. But they leave something out, and they leave out barriers to participation. They leave out the fact that property is very, very important. If you're going to have property is important, so that's one of the pillars, to restore all of the traditional rights of private property, particularly in land, structures, machines, technology. The other is to look at the free market system. It's another pillar of the Just Third Way, because that is the most democratic and objective way to determine values, you see, where everybody's vote counts when it comes to what's the value of particular goods, services, or things. The market system is as efficient and as beautiful as possible. So there's no question about that. The third, and very, very important, is to limit the economic power of the state. The state is a natural monopoly. The state produces no wealth. And so, and the state can mess things up as they have today. And it's been increasingly worse since the Depression, where we, through the state, they try to regulate the market system, but they left out something very, very important, and all the schools of economic thought have left this out, and that is access to ownership as a fundamental human right, not to take away from someone else's property, but to look at the growth of the system. Human beings haven't changed, but what has changed over thousands of years and more rapidly today than ever before are the things that we create. You know, whether you talk about artificial intelligence, robotics, etc. And I had not heard of this idea until 5 years after law school and studying economics at Chicago, where the ideas of a man named Louis Kelso, who, together with the great books philosopher, Mortimer Adler, He was also the editor-in-chief of the Encyclopedia Britannica III, a brilliant man. And he saw in Kelso's idea what he called the original theory of capitalism, and so they co-authored a book by what I think is a bad title, but the book is full of gems. It was called The Capitalist Manifesto. And in that, for the first time since law school, I discovered what justice is. They don't teach justice in any of the great law schools. They teach you the law, but don't teach you the principles of justice. But in this book, and it was written in 1958, you suddenly began to see principles of justice, which outline the principles for establishing what I call the just third way. Some people could call it personalism, because it deals with, and that's the essence of justice, by the way, to each according to what he is due. Justice starts with respect for every human being, the individual human person. And justice, if the law is not following sound principles of justice, the law will be messed up. But the law are just, they were not created by God, they were created by human beings. So if there are flaws, then we have an obligation, once we understand how to change the system, to get together and change the system. And this is how America was created. A bunch of people got together, and they created a great nation. It had some flaws. It had the flaw was slavery, where human beings became the property, were treated as things, and they became the property of others. And, of course, it took some time before we got rid of that. So I would say that in answering your question as to what is the just third way, it is a free enterprise version of economic justice. Or I could put it another way, justice is embedded together with a market system so that the market system can work. As you were mentioning your study of economics, the word started from the household, very simple ideas. There are only two sides of any economic equation. We consume and we produce, and you can't consume what isn't yet produced. So we have to look at the system in a very dynamic way. How do people come together to produce in abundance? Well, what's happening is that our tools are becoming so creative that they are destroying jobs. You may have seen in the Wall Street Journal last Thursday two opinion articles, brilliant articles. One says, is your job an endangered species, showing that technology is eating away jobs? Not just the obvious ones like toll takers on the highways and phone operators. Lawyers and doctors are at risk as well. This is what's happening in the field of science, in the physical and biological sciences. And then the second article, when computers beat human beings, by Ray Kurzweil, who's written a number of books. He's a great scientist. He says artificial intelligence is developing much more rapidly than what most of us realize. Again, he authored a book called The Age of the Spiritual Machine. This is a great scientist who's really thinking about what's happening in the world. And then Buckminster Fuller, looking at how you make the world work for 100% of humanity without in the shortest possible time. That's the challenge, without ecological damage or the disadvantage of anyone. This is a great challenge. This is what America was made to do. And so out of Kelso, when I started reading Kelso, that first book, and then the second book gets in to the whole question of capital formation. And back in the 30s and 35, the head of the Brookings,
Hold that thought right there, Dr. Curlin, because we have to take a commercial break. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals and Dr. Norman G. Curlin. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Dr. Norman G. Curlin on Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And right before the break, we were talking about what the Just Third Way is. And Dr. Curlin, I am an Ayn Rand objectivist, and when I was perusing your website, I was curious as to how the third way goes about creating this balance of property ownership or what the process is that the third way is advocating for a new system.
Right. That's a good question, because what it is saying, how do we lift people into ownership without taking the property away from those who today own? In other words, if we believe property is important, as Ayn Rand did, and the market system was important, we want to look at what are the barriers so that people can participate. If, in fact, technology is going to be displacing human beings in the process, and then Kelso developed something called binary economics, looking at both labor, people, and things, and seeing that what's really changing in the world is not people but the things, and therefore you have to own them. But how can you do that without taking away any of the property rights of those who now own? That's the key. And so in the second book, it was called The New Capitalist, in 1961 by Kelso and Adler, the subtitle was A Proposal for Freeing Economic Growth from the Slavery of Past Savings, of savings. Now, those weren't, he took that idea and showed how it can be done, but it was based on an idea of the then president of Brookings Institution, and that was the only think tank in Washington. It was the first of the big think tanks, and he was the president there for many, many years, and he wrote a book in 1935 called The Formation of Capital, and we're republishing that book. We were given permission by Brookings. We put our own introduction because his idea was how to get out of the depression, and it wasn't forcing savings. He said, it's crazy. You finance your growth out of bank credit. Bank credit is only a matter of looking at deals that will pay for themselves. In the world of finances, you probably know that in finance, the rule of thumb is don't invest in anything that doesn't pay for itself in 3 to 5 years. Some things longer, okay? If you're looking at highways, it's going to be longer than 3 to 5 years. But basically, all of the land structures, infrastructure, robotry, information intelligence that's built in there that are destroying jobs can be owned. And if they're going to be financed correctly through banks, it's done through the extension of credit. And credit is only promises made where there's something backing the promises, assets behind it. And so he said, it's crazy to ask people to reduce their consumption in order to invest, because a producer has to have customers out there. So if you shrink the customer power, you're working against the whole logic of corporate finance. And he says, the way to get us out of the depression, and of course, Roosevelt didn't listen to him, they listened to Keynes. He says, you must focus on production. You must focus on investment. And you have to have your credit system, your finance, your monetary system, your tax system, encouraging new productive assets. That's how you move from depression into prosperity. And common sense tells you that. But particularly when you got a world where there's so much unemployment, disemployment, phony employment, how do you attract people into the system so that they can work? And I remember as a kid, during the Second World War, the economy was growing at rates of 15% a year because there was a customer there for weaponry. Well, and you had 13 million of the most able-bodied people out of the workforce. And there was no unemployment. They took people who...
The government buying those weapons to go to war.
Exactly. And what we can do, what Kelso was offering, is a way to do this for producing peacetime goods and services. You see, as long as your production and your consumption incomes go rise up in balance, it makes sense. But when you have a system where a hedge fund operator last year earned $5 billion, he can't spend that. There's no way, humanly possible. And so you have to begin to say, okay, that's the past. And it's all built into the present system, which is correctable. Because Kelso was a lawyer, I'm a lawyer. Kelso was the inventor of something called the employee stock ownership plans, which was a technique to enable workers to become owners without putting up a penny, without reducing their pay. I've enabled companies to be bought out 100% by the management and employees, and all done on bank credit, repayable with the future profits of the company. In other words, using the logic of corporate finance to work for people who are non-owners. This logic could work for everybody. But that's why we invented something. Kelso used to call it the Industrial Homestead Act. Ronald Reagan supported the idea of the Industrial Homestead Act. We call it the Capital Homestead Act. But we look at the total tax system to simplify, to get rid of these deficits, to even begin to pay down the debt. But more important is to look at the money system. Because money becomes the lubricant. And look at the credit system so that capital credit can be available to all citizens as a way to grow the economy. I can give you numbers of our projections that you would need. The present Social Security system is going to be bankrupt simply because the baby boomers are starting to come in. And so the projections are that there's a hidden debt on every household of over $450,000, the projected deficits that are going to take place under the present Social Security system. There's no way for it to work. But under Capital Homestead, the promises kept made can be kept under general revenues. We changed the tax system. Let me first go to the financing. I'll tell you how we would finance the revenues to be able to pay for Social Security entitlements out of general revenues. We would give an exemption to every citizen, every adult, every dependent, $30,000 for the producers, the husband and wife, let's say, and let's say they had two children, $20,000 each for the children. They wouldn't pay a penny in Social Security taxes or federal income taxes until
Here's my question. This sounds way fabulous, but we are a country that only invents and consumes. We produce nothing. So what production companies that are we going to create that produce goods that we desire without any other government influence or artificial support that we're going to be able to take ownership in? Because we're lazy people. We don't want to work. Well, there are plenty of jobs out there, but people don't want to work. They just want a handout.
Well, we have to get away from that because the handout, in other words, they're looking for institutionalized charity. Charity is supposed to be given freely, but now we use the state to take from some to give to others. It doesn't encourage production. What we have to do is provide the means by which the private sector, entrepreneurs, and those that they hire can get the credit necessary to build the technologies necessary to recapture the production of marketable goods and services. See, what happened is by limiting the bulk of the population to wages, because they're not given the equal opportunity to become owners through the Kelso method, capital homesteading, what happens is when I was a kid, I was getting 25 cents an hour as the minimum wage, my first job. You see? And we've ratcheted up the minimum wage. And then unions come together because they are not owners, and they increase labor costs. So what happened? We lost our basic industries to Japan first, then Korea, and now China and India. So if we're to again be productive, we have to lift ourselves beyond what I call the wage slave system to people coming together voluntarily through a market system, having their increases come not from labor costs, but from the bottom line. So they work together to make sure that the capital is going to pay for it, the capital credit will pay for itself, and thereafter you got dividend incomes. Now, I'm saying, is there anything wrong? Do you see anything wrong with what we're saying? It's consistent with free enterprise. It's consistent with a market system. And Ayn Rand is worried about the government growing. The reason the government grows is because you have a system where the top 1% of Americans under the system, which is not anybody's fault, under the system, the top 1% own more than the bottom 90% combined.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, if you're going to have a system work, people have to get their income some way if they're going to be consumed. You produce for consumers. Well, if, in fact, you have somebody getting $5 billion in income for a year, and they can't consume it, what does that mean? What about it means that others?
Yeah, but who are we to say how much somebody can make?
Oh, yeah, no, you don't
have
to.
I mean, good for
determine.
That guy that he figured it out.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that we should decide that. I'm not saying that that's wrong, that there's something morally wrong. No, the system is wrong because the system didn't create equal opportunity to become an owner.
Well, we've got to pull the unions out to
right.
reduce our labor costs, and
right.
we have to get Americans over this entitlement mentality.
Right.
I mean,
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely
and that's a bigger
right.
issue than just changing the system, because you could change a system, but with the current attitudes and opinions
right.
that Americans have, it won't work anyway.
Right. But you're right. You have to change the system so that you don't look for equality of results. It's equality of opportunity. And if the system is now structured so that the opportunities are monopolized by a few, you're going to have the bulk of the voters voting for people who will support a welfare state. That's the problem. And if politically you want, I've been able to get people from the left and the right on Capitol Hill to back the employee stock ownership plans. Okay? Left and right. Why? Because it's right. So that we were, when we, when I was working with Kelso as the Washington Council, we never spent money. We didn't have votes or money to be able to buy the politicians' support of employee stock ownership plans. There are now 11,000 companies with over 11 million workers who would not have been owners. So we're now developing models. Those models are there. They've been there since 1974, and they work. What they discover in companies is that companies in which the employees have an opportunity to own, in which they have some voice in the governance, and they receive income from the bottom line, those companies outperform those companies in which you have absentee owners.
And agreed. That's demonstrated in a lot of different companies that have chosen that path. We've come to a close of our time today, Dr. Kerlin. If folks want to find out more about the Just Third Way or participate in the Center for Economic and Social Justice, where can they go to find you?
Thank you very much. The CESJ.org is the website, and there are free downloads of books, including the Kelso books, CESJ.org, or our business. We do have a business. It's Equity Expansion International, which is EEI-consultants.com. We're investment bankers for the 99%. Thank you very much, Heather.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Kerlin. It was great to have you on.